Hello and welcome to another episode of the Paper Pencil Podcast Season 2. I am Swarnavo, the host of this show, and this is a place where I get to have lovely conversations with people from the art world. And if you enjoy listening to this episode, do consider subscribing to the podcast and do the amazing job of telling your friends about the show. You can also follow us on Instagram to stay updated on the upcoming episodes. The page name, of course, is Paper Pencil Podcast. So, today's guest came in as a recommendation from Vaishnavi, our guest from Season 2, Episode 3. After the recording, she said that I have to, and I again, you know, have to in capital. So I have to get this person to this podcast. So Vaish, thank you for the recommendation. And with that, today I have the honor of welcoming Kavita Arvind to the Paper Pencil Podcast. She is an artist, illustrator, design educator. She studied at NID, of course, my crush, NID Ahmedabad. And then she began her career working in the entertainment industry, the television in this case. She was behind, you know, airing some promos, launching new shows. And again, I can't wait to know more about them. And then she, in fact, went back to NID, but this time as a teacher. So you do realize the, you know, the expertise and experience that she brings onto this conversation today. So, you know, she's, of course, done a whole bunch of other things. You know, there are a lot of things to kind of uncover for me in this case. But yeah, with that, without further ado, you know, Kavita, welcome to the Paper Pencil Podcast. It's a big deal that you are here today.
Thank you so much, Swar. And thank you, Vaish, for this recommendation. I am looking forward to having a nice conversation with you, and it's wonderful to be here.
Perfect. Thank you. So, you know, Vaish actually gave me a little bit of her background that day, and she said that she was working with you, and, you know, so that kind of got me interested. And I was like, okay, I have to know who this person is. And then the more I, you know, searched about you, the more I found out about you, of course, you know, the more and more, you know, I wanted to have this conversation. I'm so happy that, you know, it worked out, and that too really quickly. So thank you so much, you know, for the quick turnaround time. This is actually a big deal, but cool. So, you know, let's get started, Kavita. You know, I have I want to know a lot of things, of course, but you know, the first mandatory question where we start off pretty much all the episodes is, you know, your journey so far, right? So why don't you start off and, you know, tell us about your journey, and again, I leave it up to you, you know, wherever you want to start it from. But yeah, how did all of this happen? Take us through that.
All right. So I've been on this planet fairly long. So this journey business might take a tad longer than you sort of planned for. So, but I'm going to keep it quick. So I am a Tamilian, Swar, and I was born in Calcutta, and I grew up there. The first 9 years was in Cal. Mm-hmm. My parents were bankers, both working with the RBI. So I've fairly moved around quite a bit within India. But the first 9 years was in Calcutta, and I had a very idyllic childhood. This was the 70s and early 80s that I'm talking about, where I remember playing a lot and skinning my knees, climbing every tree, and being sort of the bully of the group, the dada of the group, sort of a very ragamuffin group of boys that I led.
Oh.
Yes. And bossed over quite regularly. But soon, I think, and lots of lovely memories of catching fireflies when we had power cuts, like they call load shedding back
load
then.
Load shedding, correct.
And running around in absolute dark. Parenting back then was fairly relaxed, yeah. Unlike the sort of anxious parenting that we do now. So I grew up like that. And then moved to Bombay, where I did the rest of my schooling. I went to a very modest and sweet little girls' school where there were only girls. Tragedy, but fun, because you could really be yourself. And I took part in a lot of competitions, drawing, recitation, debate, elocution, essay writing. And I think I was one of those obnoxious kids who, in spite of being the backbencher, would ace everything, right?
One of those. Let's see, that's a deadly combination. Yeah. You know, in school, I never made friends with those people.
You sort of think,
Yeah. I never made
Yeah.
friends with those people back in school because, you know, I was a middle bencher. So na idhar ka na udhar ka. So I was kind of in between. Now I was, you know, I had the guts to kind of be the backbencher and be that unruly sort of a, you know, against the grain of society kid. And at the same time, I was not even good at studies. So I was like in the middle somewhere, you know, the bell curve. I was at the center of it. But yeah.
But let me put this sort of misconception at rest. In no way was I a rebel. I was most certainly one of absolutely good children who studied and went back home. A terrible kid only when I went to NID. Until then, I
Oh.
was an angel straight from heaven. NID was where I was like not someone you'd want to write home about. Anyway, we will talk about that.
Yes.
So, like I said, Mom and Dad, there was a lovely little good values growing up, a sweet little middle class home. I have an elder brother who now lives in Bombay. There was a lot of emphasis on working hard, on sort of having good values, on leading a good life, you know. And after that is when I did after 12th is when I got through NID. And I was one of those kids who was good at everything. And so I was a little confused about what I should be doing, but I always drew really. So some of my father's friends actually saw my work, and that's when they sort of said, you know, why don't you think of consider NID? There's this place where which is a great place if you draw well, was how it was introduced to me, which is not the case at all. Let me debunk that. Good drawing has got nothing to do with being a good designer. It helps, yes, but only to an extent. So anyway, so then when I went to NID, the options were either architecture or NID. There was really, I wasn't interested in medicine or engineering at all. But when I went to the campus, before that, there was a test. When I wrote the test, I was completely gobsmacked, swear, because never in my life had I written a test like that. It was fun. Do you even ever remember writing a test, which is 3 hours long, and it's fun, and you can't have enough of it? So
Absolutely. So
that's what
you
the
know what,
test was like.
Kavita? One thing I'll probably add here. So you know, before the recording, I was telling you, right? Like later in life, I kind of got to know about NID. So there was this phase, a very short phase, of course, where I thought, you know, why don't I do this? Why don't I leave my job and you know do this whole thing of you know reset altogether in my career? Let's leave my job and let's you know let's try for NID and let's see what happens, right? Let's sit for the entrance. And I actually downloaded a bunch of, you know, the previous year question papers to see how things go, right? And a lot of people told me that's how you should prepare. And you were right. I went through the question paper and I was surprised in a very good way. I was like, this is cool. This is good. This is fun, right? And you were right. Like, you know, solving those, it actually made me think a lot in the right way. So, for example, you know, I think I may have discussed this before as well. I remember, it's of course it's been 7, 8 years now, but I do remember, you know, questions like, you know, imagine you're an ant on the sitting on the dining table, and suddenly the gravity goes off, and you know everything is floating mid-air, and draw that scene from that ant's perspective. I was like, that is so cool, and I get to do that in an exam. So yeah, I get what you mean. I get what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it excites me to even think of that right now. And now I find that question to be really intimidating. I mean, if I had to do that now, so I guess when we are younger, we are a lot more fearless. When I went to the campus is when I fell in love with it and was like, I am going nowhere else. This is where I want to be. I hope they'll take me. And it worked out. So my undergrad was in film and video communication. Though I did go in with the intention of, I don't know why I'm spending so much time speaking about NID. Let's cut
Oh,
it
please
short.
do, please do, please do. I love this.
So I majored in film and video communication. Though I had thought that I'd do textiles, but that quickly changed because once I reached NID is when I realized that my skills were below average. I was with my peers were the best in the country. And everything that I thought that I was great at, I was actually just about okay at because there was
Oh.
someone else who was so good at it. We had amazing peers and some brilliant seniors. And just seeing their work, I realized it's really intimidating for a 17-year-old to realize, hey, you know what? You're not that great. Are you just okay? So somehow I sort of told myself back then that I'm not a maker. I'm not good at making, but I'm very articulate and I have so many things to say. And being at NID sort of brought out the activist in me and the feminist in me. And I sort of began to look at the world in a perspective that I had never seen before as a young woman, as a person who was deeply interested in a society that is even today very casteist and very colored in so many ways and so elitist. So a lot of my work started tending towards films that border on activism. So I worked with rural India. I worked with caste as an issue, gender as an issue. So all of this became really important to me. So that's how the film trajectory happened. And I don't know why, right after all of this, you know, I went and joined entertainment television. And the next 4 years was unlearning everything I had learned at NID. It was
so
making...
This was which year? Help me with the timeline. This was around
2000. Yeah, 2000 is when I joined television. And all I was doing was back... That's when Ekta Kapoor shows had just sort of come and everybody, the whole nation was like, yay, this is amazing. And I don't know why. And there were a lot of shows that we worked on where I was working as an on-air promo producer, creating promos, launching shows, working on Femina and Filmfare and everything sort of that I... Not with Balaji, with Sony Entertainment Television.
Sony Entertainment.
So Balaji did a lot of shows
with, Sony,
with us.
Correct. Yeah, correct.
Yeah. But you can't do that, right? You can't. I mean, you probably, I don't know how it is with you, but I'm incredible that you have a full-time IT job, but you're making so much time for what you feel so strongly for what gives you joy, which is why you're able to exist in both these worlds.
Absolutely.
Right, very, very distinct worlds from one another. So of course, I couldn't abide by it for very long. I did very well. I learned everything it is, what it's like to work with very difficult people and meet deadlines and be very professional. I learned all of that. I also learned how to party really well and work very late and party all morning. Until 3 hours of the morning. Bombay is amazing like that.
Right, right.
But that was it. I was done. I was burnt out in 4 years and I went back to NID to teach. I was incredibly lucky. I started teaching at a very young age, at the age of 24 or 25. It was really young.
Wow.
And I only had about 4 years of experience in the industry back then. But all of my amazing guides and mentors who taught me, I was teaching with them. And learning so much by just looking at how they were teaching, how they were as mentors, how they would guide a student. So it was the best time to be a young person learning the ropes of teaching, right? What do you do? How do you do this? And a lot of the students were maybe as old as I was. The master's students are maybe
Absolutely.
A year or two, right? And
Absolutely.
How the hell do you take someone seriously? Like, you are my faculty. You look younger than me. yeah. But it was great. It was great learning. But I always kept coming back to the industry.
How
so
come?
Even though, because while teaching can be exhausting. If you're a good teacher and a really committed teacher, you give so much of yourself, right?
Yeah, I agree.
And if you are, and it's all consuming, a full-time teaching job is all consuming. And I was not making anything. I was not, I mean, though I did do a few small illustration projects, there was barely any time for my own creative practice. And and you know this, what sort of keeps you rejuvenated and alive and creative is your own creative practice, right?
Absolutely.
Which is why you can wake up the next day and look forward to the next day. Now, you take that away from a creative person.
True.
It works for some people. It didn't work for me.
True.
Which is why I came back to the industry and I worked as a graphic
don't you
designer.
So Kavita, on that note, that's actually a very good thing that you said. You know, I don't know. So, I'll give you two, three perspectives over here, and let's see, you know, how that conversation goes through. So, I am going to talk to you now from both my, I, like you said, I do exist in two different worlds, right? So, in one world, I'm a facilitator where I am actually training people. I won't call myself a teacher because, you know, there's a huge difference between a teacher and a facilitator. So, I'm a facilitator where I'm training a whole bunch of people. Again, in this case, you know, in most of the cases, people way older to me, sometimes even double or more than double my age, right? And I do that like day in and day out, right? So there are these moments, you know, where I love my job. I absolutely love talking to people. I love, you know, love it when I can make them think and have that aha moment. And suddenly, you know, it's not about the age, but, you know, whoever suddenly they come up and say, you know, this was new. I did not think of it before. That's like what keeps me driving from that perspective, right? But the point is, you know, there are days, I haven't told my manager this, but there are days when, you know, after doing this a whole number of times, you start really getting a little exhausted. So I'll give you an example. So today, you know, we are recording, today is a Monday. And this Wednesday, I have, you know, two sessions that I'll be taking. Both are the same sessions in two halves. So first half and second half, basically the same thing I'll be talking about to two different sets of people, right? I know for a fact that, you know, I love that content. I love talking about that thing. But by 6 o'clock that evening, I know for a fact I will get extremely exhausted and I'll step out of the room and I'll be like, you know, I need a break, right? So that's one part of the story, right? Where you feel like, you know, you need to come out. But at the same time, I think I can also add from the illustration perspective or the creative side of me that you are right that, you know, as a, let's say, trainer who's in the creative field, let's say in this case, your case, NID, you probably go and talk about design and whatnot, right? You talk about the arts, right? But probably at the end of the day, you need to come back and do your thing also, which will expose you to something new, which you can come back and share tomorrow in the classroom, right? So I think that's like a cycle which needs to happen. Otherwise, you're just talking about the same old thing which you have been talking about for such a long time. That would be exhausting, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That would be exhausting. Whether you call it teaching or you call it facilitating, working with groups of people and helping them question things or be curious about something, which is what you do very much, like absolutely. What I do, is work, is labor. It's as much work as, I know, getting out there and doing something which is sort of physically exhausting.
Right.
But having said that, it's also what keeps you going. It's like I've discovered it's my calling. Being in a classroom and having someone disagree with me excites me. It makes me so happy when someone disagrees and says, hey, but Kavita, that's not what I think. This is what blah, 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 blah. And at that, immediately I forget I'm exhausted, right? So I really like a classroom that is...
You like to solve problems.
I am a problem solver.
That told me exactly. When somebody says I disagree with you, that's like a new complicated Rubik's Cube to solve. And let's see how can we do that in a win-win sort of a situation. I love that. Absolutely. Yeah.
But more than now, increasingly, I don't want to solve this problem. I just want to have a conversation. And I want to listen. And I want to see that there's a perspective that is different from mine. That's super exciting, you know. Now that I've taught now for 20 years or so, that sort of has changed a little bit. It's less of a, more than sort of saying, let's figure out how I can unpack this for you. It's let's just see where this goes
So that's of a coaching conversation, right? So there you are stepping from a teacher and becoming a coach because you're really looking at, okay, let's look at the options ahead of us and see what the way forward can be. Makes sense.
So after having taught at NID, I worked in Pune for a while as a senior graphic designer. And then is when after that is when I moved to Bangalore once I was married. And for a brief period of time, I decided that I'm just going to paint. And I wasn't pursuing a sort of a full-time job. I started painting and I had a solo exhibition at Alliance. I had my daughter back then. So I was pretty much working from home, working on really small book projects. I did this lovely book project with Little Latitude called When I Grew Up. And before that, I had done a book with Puffin. But this this project with Didi, Vinay Didi, who is the founder of Little Latitude, was super fun because my daughter was also of the similar age where she'd be interested in books like that. So I practiced. So this was being a mom and also working from home and keeping it really small, having an art practice. We've also traveled out and back from the country several times, but Bangalore's always been home base. But about 2014, I'm not sure when, is when I started teaching at Srishti, which is the design school in Bangalore. And along with a very dear friend and colleague of mine, we set up a department called Information Arts and Design Practices, which essentially, she's an activist and a poet and an artist, and I'm the designer. I'm sort of the rational thinker here. And she sort of came from the very creative field of design, arts and education. That's where she was coming in from. And I was coming in from design and education. So we put this together and we ran, we wrote the curriculum, we created this department and we ran it. It's still running really well, both at the undergrad and postgrad levels. And we basically brought, we had some great projects when we did this. We worked with Katha, with Tulika, we worked with Wildlife Trust of India, where we had groups of students who would sign up with us for their final graduating project. And then we choose a community to work with. So we worked with the Siddhis of Mainali on the beautiful Kavandis that they make, the quilts. We've worked with the exiled community of Tibetans in Bailakuppe and created a series of children's books where four kathas, some of them have got published. I don't know if you know Devangana Das. Do you know her? She's Jungle Radio's illustrator. You may have seen this book. So Devangana's book was this, this.
I think
the seed
I have,
idea
the
came
name,
from.
Yeah.
So Jungle Radio's this lovely book.
Dash, right? Like as in DASH, right?
Yes, Dash.
Correct. Of course. Yeah. The Jungle Radio. Correct.
So this,
I have seen that.
Yes. So
often.
The idea was born in Bandipur in one of our projects.
Oh, wow.
Where, yes, that's when she created the first draft of the book. And eventually she went on to, of course, work on it by herself and put it out there. And it's such a beautiful book. But that's where she was one of the students who worked with my colleague and I back then. So that was Srishti. That was 4 years of being a design educator at Srishti. After which I felt like I needed to get back to the industry. What am I doing? I'm not doing anything on my own. I worked as a design consultant for a while. And once the pandemic set in, that's when a lot of us pivoted, right? That's when a lot of us decided to stop, take stock and really zone in on what is it that we really wanted to do. We were all at home. That's when I started teaching online. I was one of the very early adapters of teaching online. And Chediaur has always been, I founded Chediaur, I think 18 years back, 16 years back. So must be 16 years for sure. But I wasn't doing much under Chediaur. So this was about 3 years back is when I went back to Chediaur, which is my company, and really started teaching online extensively, making art, focusing on my art practice, collaborating with people. But I've always done so many things. I've always had worn so many hats. But with the pandemic, now is when I am finally focusing. I'm still a generalist, but now I know at the core, I am a creative enabler and an educator. And art is perhaps the medium that I use to be able to do that. So that's sort of the long journey in as succinctly as I could. That's where I am right now.
So, but you know, the last point that you mentioned, it takes time, right? Like the fact that you said, like, you know, after probably doing this for 20 years, you know, close to 20 years, you finally figured out or you probably gravitated towards something and you probably had that sense of clarity that, you know, this is what I want to do, right? You know, because and I'm throwing this to you because you were into, like, you know, the education side of things, and that too at NID, which is, you know, right after school is where you'd see a lot of kids come into, right? Don't you think it's like weird, because sometimes I think about this, that, you know, don't you think it's weird that At such a young age of, let's say, 16 for that matter, you are supposed to know what you want to do in life and then choose a course and actually commit to it for 4 years and then actually start off on that career path, right? Whereas even I agree that, you know, it takes a lot of time. Like, you know, today I know I want to be, you know, one of my goals. And of course, it has come true. And now, you know, to kind of nurture it even further is, you know, the children's book illustration, right? I want to get better and get better books and, you know, tell better stories, more meaningful stories, right? That's what I want to do. But, you know, I know for a fact somewhere, you know, deep inside, probably 2, 3, 4, 5 years later, I may one day wake up and say, you know, I don't think this is my gig any longer, right? I probably want to do theater for all I know, or, you know, anything for that matter, right? So that's weird, don't you think, that, you know, kids are supposed to know back in 16, when one says 16, 15 or 16, what they want to do. Like, that's just not just, what do you think?
I have several responses to this. All right. Okay. So I'm going to try and remember everything that came to my mind as you were articulating this. So yes, I do agree with you that 16 is like super young to know what you want to do for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. All right. But having said that, when we were at NID, we mm-hmm. didn't decide. That mm-hmm. wasn't the first thing that we did. We had a year and a half of just doing everything. And you know this, I think, with your right. conversation with Prash and Lavanya as well.
Right.
And we decided after that. So a lot of people who came in thinking they'd do industrial design or textile design completely pivoted and did a communication design course, right? So, but I know that's not the practice now. So let's talk about what the practice is now, mm-hmm. where 16, 17-year-olds are saying, I'm going to do animation. And they're sort of stuck with it for the next 4 years and all of it.
Right.
But here's what my understanding has been. It's that learning is like a river and it flows. It collects so many things along with it.
True.
And it just keeps flowing and it gets stronger. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter what you did as your undergrad. It doesn't matter what you do as your profession, what you hope to do. Every single thing, every single conversation that excited you, every course that you took that excited you, anything that made you do a double take and say, really, that's completely different from how I looked at the world, is going to come together and mm-hmm. help you shape whatever you do. So I think learning is a continuous process. It's a continuum, okay? So I honestly don't think it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you studied. You could mm-hmm. be doing something completely different. For instance, I studied film. So even now, in an illustration course, I talk about Miyazaki's films. I talk about Kurosawa, the way he composed his shots, or Ray, for that matter. We look at films together, even in my illustration course. So none of this is black or white. It's all a big, nice, happy, gray mess. And it's gorgeous. So that's what I think. The other thing that I think is that, for instance, I did my master's in my 40s because I don't know why I didn't do it earlier, but thank God I didn't do it earlier, because when I did it now, as recently as 4 years back, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. Because of everything else that I'd already done with light, through a process of subtraction or elimination, I knew I had to be doing this. And let me tell you something, this whole idea of teaching illustration did not happen organically, because why? I am a designer. I am a rational thinker. Mm-hmm. I did an entire design process on this. Mm-hmm. I made Venn diagrams. I sort of posted in the whole thing and I figured out what my overlaps were. What is it that I'm really damn good at?
And you what really is it that
makes me super happy?
You really did that.
I did it.
Like,
and
you
I
actually
found
did like a whole Venn diagram and everything. Like, I would imagine somebody doing it, but, you know, I would never think of somebody actually doing that. Like, to say is one thing and actually to do is another thing. But, you know, I did like your river analogy quite a bit.
Oh,
like,
yes.
That makes sense. That river analogy makes so much sense. But, you know, I feel at the core of it, one thing which I truly believe is at the core of it, you know, you just need to have that, I don't know, open sort of a mindset, one, and second of all, you know, you need to, or, you know, I don't know. Kavita, don't you think it's also a factor of a lot of things? So, you know, I was going to say that, you know, you need to have an open mind, one. And second of all, you know, you need to be okay with this not being it, right? That's sort of a mindset of, okay, this is not it. And my plan so far, probably, you know, the plan that I had, the 5-year plan that I had for myself, probably is not really a good plan, or, you know, a practical plan. And, you know, it's okay for me to sway the other side and think of, you know, a different career path, or, you know, learning, or whatnot, right? But don't you think in this case, there's also another angle that comes in, which is the whole, I don't know, the responsibilities in terms of, like, the finances and da-da-da, all of those things, the real life things, right? Now, let's say, you know, somebody in their 30s, let's say late 30s or early 40s, they want to do this, right? They're like, okay, you know what, enough of coding, enough of being a Java developer. I now want to go and, you know, again, let's say pursue the arts for that matter. I want to get go to NID and get a master's if possible, right? Or Srishti and get a master's if possible. But then also the whole thing of, what if this person now has a family? What if this person this? What if this person that? Don't you think those also come in? And how do you tackle those then?
Yes, of course it does. I think there were two parts to your comment. Let's talk about the second one, because that's what's sort of fresh in my mind. Of course, you need to have a supportive partner and a situation where you are financially able to sort of do these things. That is extremely important. Of course, you need your family's backing, and thankfully, I have that. I'm married to this amazing Peter Pan who never grows up. Yes, an absolute super nerd and a tech guy. So Shami is the one who actually came up with the name Chidiyaur. And so he's always had my back, which is why I have been able to pursue with a single-minded interest what I love doing.
Right.
But having said that, Swar, I think if you give, you've got to give something time, love, commitment, and energy, right? And you've got to sort of give it a little bit of time to grow. And once that happens, I do not see why it cannot be lucrative enough.
Right.
Eventually. Right. I'm not saying you know, you become sort of, it takes off from day one, though it does sort of happen to some people. It may or may not. But if you do give something that you love so much, that sort of makes you shine and brings people together.
Right.
And you truly love what you're doing, and if you give it the right amount of time and you keep learning, you keep listening, and you keep growing, and you be okay with not having a 5-year plan, with having things go to shit, and be ready to sort of be willing to look at it anew and give it that kind of time.
Right.
Which I guess you would to any meaningful relationship of any kind as well. Imagine, why would it not be lucrative enough eventually?
True. And yet, you know, while I agree, and yet
sorry about that.
Again, your noise cancellation is pretty good. I could just hear a little bit of sound. A little bit of sound.
Oh.
But that's okay. Tiny wee bit, but that's okay. That's absolutely fine. We've had worse in this podcast. Okay, that's how great my audio quality is. We've had worse. You know, last season, I remember doing this one episode with this one amazing illustrator again, and that was the day of Diwali. That was the evening of Diwali, and right outside my window, there were people just going crazy with all sorts of crackers, right? So in that, like, no amount of noise suppression can really hold up to that. But yeah, anyway, but you know, I get your point, and I absolutely agree with that. You know, I wholeheartedly agree, because I know, you know, if that happens to me in my career or in my journey, I know for a fact I will try and do whatever it takes. And that's my plan right now as well, right? To try and do whatever it takes to make that happen, to make time for that, right? But yet, you know, just like a passing thought, and maybe, you know, a closing thought on this part, which is, you know, it's still, it feels sad to see so many, and I'm sure while growing up, you must have seen as well, right? So many people who probably did not take the whole risk of trying something different, and rather just continuing with things because, if you know, for a bunch of reasons, I'm not just going to, you know, victimize them or something, but for a whole bunch of reasons. But towards the end, you know, you do see that, you know, you're that midlife crisis and all of those crises sort of a thing happening where people wake up one day and they're like, what have I done with my life so far? Like, right? What have I done so far? Right. And yet people don't change. Right. And I'll tell you what, you know, since I'm talking about that, I don't know why we are talking about this so much, but yeah, I'll just probably let it go a little more. I've seen so many of my friends, Kavita, you know, since I spoke to you about the NID piece. So, you know, when I was in Pune, right, when I was in Pune before I moved to Bangalore, one of my friends, she was also trying to, you know, appear for these NID exams. And she had actually appeared for one of them. And I think she went for coaching as well. And she was also in the job with me. So she was also in an IT job, you know, doing this and at the same time trying it out. And I did see that, you know, she was really, really putting in everything she had, and she was really passionate about that. But you know, one thing that really, and I've told her this bunch of times. I don't know if she's listening to this episode, but if she is, she knows who I'm talking about. But the point is, you know, after all these years, she just left it. She, you know, she tried a couple of times, and then, you know, life happened, and she got a promotion, and that seemed to be, you know, more lucrative. And every time I meet her, she's like, "Damn, I should have done it." But I know she's not gonna do it at least right now, right? It just feels a little off-putting, let's say, that you know, people with the talent, with the skill, even with a little bit of the mindset as well, you know, for whatever reason, they just don't make the jump. But I think there's just a whole lot of reasons behind that. Anyway, coming back, you know, let's come back to you, because this episode is more about you. I had a couple of questions to ask you before I move to the next part from your journey. So I know you said you grew up in Calcutta, and for people from Calcutta, in case you're wondering where in Calcutta did she grow up in, she's told me that she grew up in Gholiyahatt, and this would be again Kavita 70s, like you said, right? Late 70s, early 80s is that time period. And
That's right.
and if Calcutta people, you're wondering where, which school did she go to? Would you like to share which school? Half of Calcutta has
I
gone.
went to South Point.
Yes, so half of Calcutta has gone to that school somehow. Like, you know, every 3 out of 10 people that I meet in Calcutta went to South Point. But yeah, so she did go to South Point. So tell me this, when you were in Cal, and I'm sure you know that, you know, this has been a part of the bong culture forever, that, you know, to send their kids to different classes, extracurricular classes, when, you know, they're really young and everything. And same happened with me and so many other people. So when you were growing up in Calcutta, did you or your parents also felt the peer pressure and sent you for a drawing class or a dance class or something?
So Amma tried her best to push me towards Bharatnatyam because I'm a
Ah,
Tamil girl.
right.
And I was like, there is no way I'm going to learn Bharatnatyam. So that was a flat no. And yes, but I did go to a drawing class. Every Saturday, Amma would take me to this drawing class. But in retrospect, I do not think this was a very inspired teacher because what he would do, Swar, would be he would draw, let's say, a crow, and all of
Brilliant.
us would have to draw the crow 20 times, exactly the way
Brilliant.
he drew it. But
Brilliant.
in spite of that, in spite of this, I managed to love art. I have no idea how I
Brilliant.
managed to continue to want to go and draw the same crow that he drew 20 times. And yeah, so art class
Brilliant.
happened, but nothing else. That's
So
it. I refused to do.
I'll tell you why I, you know, did this whole thing of clapping and
Tell
when,
me.
because that really connects with me. Okay, and since you know, you were a teacher later on as well to art students, let's say in an art college, like probably the best in the country, right? What do you think about this? I wholeheartedly agree with you that, you know, when you look at art teachers, and the same thing for me as well, right? I went to, I think I had two art teachers growing up, because I actually continued till I was in class 11, right? Till my final ISC boards, I just went on. I was like, this is one class I love, and I have to go there, right? So again, same thing, Saturday, and later on it became Sunday morning. And you know, I'm pretty sure the same thing, right? Like Kavita, like, you know, the neighborhood kids would come together, and this one person would be there, and you know, it's somebody's house, and you know, everybody would sit together, and that's sort of a ambiance, right? Now, I absolutely agree with you. Be it at school, my art teacher in school, you know, the art and craft class, and my these you know, extracurricular weekend teachers who were teaching art. That time I did not really think of it, but now when I think of it in retrospect, I think they were just teaching me to be a Xerox machine, like a photocopy machine, right? And you were right, like, you know, I clearly remember And this is like, you know, one of those those angst that I'll carry to my grave properly. Probably, I was in class five. Okay, I so remember this day, Kavita. I was in class five, and Mr. Basu, I will not name the full name, but Mr. Basu, who was one of the art teacher back in school. You know, I still remember we are all sitting, and I go to him to show him my drawing, and he's supposed to, you know, give me a grade on that or whatnot, right? And I have spent the previous evening staying up quite late, even though my parents did not like it. You know, making a painting which I thought was amazing. And I'll tell you what I did. Okay, I of course, you watercolor back in the day, right? So I made the outline with a pencil. I did the watercolor, and once the watercolor dried out, I used the pencil again to do the outline once more. So what happened was the outline became very, the contrast became very high, right? So the they were very pronounced, and stylistically, I would say, I was like, dude, this looks pretty good. Like, wow, I have never really thought of it before, but this looks quite good. Otherwise, the outline would get washed away. Now it's even more bold, right? And with a lot of pride, I went to this teacher and I was like, yeah, this is what I've made, right? And he literally took a red pen and he just slashed across the page. And it hurts, Kavita, to tell about that right now, right? It hurts to tell about that.
I could imagine.
And he actually gave me like a F or something or whatever the lowest grade could be, right? And he said, this is bad. He literally used the word, this is bad, or something of that sort, right? And I came back and, you know, then that's the day I realized I need to have my own art copy, which is my own thing, not to bring to school and show others. And then one thing which this guy would like, because I needed that A or A plus as well. Because if I'm not getting A plus in art, what am I showing my parents? Like, because in math and chemistry, I'm not getting that, right? And same thing happened everywhere else, right? So the idea is I draw this and you have to make it exactly in this way. And that's the end of it. Don't you feel that just defeats the whole purpose of art, like how it should be taught and what should be encouraged?
It absolutely does. And this is one of the reasons why if anyone asks me, I teach adults at Chidiyavur, mm-hmm. right? And there are so many stories like this. Mm-hmm. There are stories of people who loved art, who were fearless, mm-hmm. and they drew the most beautiful things, the most impossible mm-hmm. things as a child. And then someone said, this is shit. This right. is just not good enough. This doesn't right. cut it. Or said, hello, what are you doing with art? It's not going to help you in any way.
Yeah.
Have a living. So please do engineering or something else akin
yeah,
to that.
My story.
And
that's
they've just, that's your story, but you're doing okay.
Yeah,
you've stuck in your heels and you're doing what you love. So good for you, Swar. So most of the people who sign up with me for my illustration courses with Chidiyavur are folks like this, folks across ages who were told that they made bad drawings and they shouldn't be drawing, or they should be doing something more lucrative. So I have people coming to me in their 60s, mm-hmm. in their 20s, in their 30s, mm-hmm. across ages, who say, is this even okay? Can I even do this? Is it okay for me to do this differently? You've done it this way, but mine is not like yours.
Right.
So constantly I have to reassure them and say, listen, your voice, your artistic style needs to have its place in the sun.
Right.
And you do not have to imitate what I'm doing. Skills are just a minuscule part of an art practice. It doesn't matter if you have skill or not. What's
right.
important is the story that you want to tell and how much excited you are in telling that story, right?
Absolutely.
Or how excited you are in making that mark and how much joy it gives you. So that's what I have to constantly bring to my learners' attention. Speaking of NID, I want to be brutally honest with you. Yeah. I honestly don't think that being from NID is such a big deal. It's not. I have met so many folks who haven't had an elite design or art school background
right.
who are incredible right. when it comes to problem solving in their work, in applying the principles of design or
right.
as artists. So it's got really, it's an incredible place. I am who I am thanks to that place, but that's not the only place where
right.
you can find your own.
Right.
I know people who've figured out by doing all sorts of work and have taught themselves
mm-hmm.
What design is and
mm-hmm.
who are doing incredibly well. These are people whose work I admire so much.
Mm-hmm.
So So I would say it's really okay. It's it sounds very aspirational and amazing, but especially now with the way education has opened up and the amount of resources that are available to us, there is no one place that can any longer claim to be the mecca of a particular kind of learning anymore. And that's another reason why I teach the way I do, because a lot of us cannot now in their 40s or even in their 20s sign up to an extremely expensive elite design or art school. But why can't we be learning if that's what we want to do? I know so many people who want to draw, who want to paint, who want to do children's books and who have no idea how. So I'm like, let's do this. Let's learn together.
And since we spoke about this whole, you know, this method of teaching, which is, you know, I will draw this and then you have to replicate the same thing, you know, very, very recently, I had a very similar experience. So my cousin who is, who just turned 7 last week, right? He turned 7 and he in fact goes to your school. So I was telling you before the recording, right? So he's currently going to your school. And so I was going through his art copy. I had gone back to Calcutta and, you know, I was going through his, he was showing me his art copy. And I saw that, you know, in a lot of cases, he decided to choose a completely different color for something, right? Let's say a tree blue, let's say for a tree, right? And and he told me that, you know, his art teacher back in school was like, you know, they of course show their disapproval towards the tree being blue. And you know, I told him like, yeah, but why can't it be blue? And he gave me, I forgot what was the reasoning he gave me. He gave me actually a very good explanation as to why the tree according to him should be blue. And I said, you know, that's what I told him, you know, why don't you have two art copies? Now it's time for you already to do it. Have two art copies, one where the trees are blue and the one where the trees are, you know, the boring green in this case. So that's one part of the thing. And yeah, so, and you know, since you spoke about Chidiya Ode, and that's also something which I'd like to, you know, get into and understand more. So let's probably do that. So first tell me, what is Chidiya Ode? I know you have been doing it for a while. I know Vaishnavi also subscribes to Chidiya Ode in a way, and that's how your name came up last time. So first tell me, what is Chidiya Ode, and maybe, you know, how and why did you even start it? Let's go with that. Yeah.
I started Chidiya Ode about 16 years back when I was working largely as an illustrator and artist. And I felt that there should be sort of a name or a concept that ties everything together. And I still continue to be very interested in work that is talks about gender and identity. Mm-hmm. So a lot of my work was with working with feminist organizations like organizations that worked, NGOs that worked at a very grassroots level. So I was creating workbooks for them or creating illustrated manuals for them. So it started off like that. So and Chidiya Ode, as you know, Swar, means fly away little bird. Mm-hmm. It's also this very sweet little game that we play, right? Chidiya Ode, Hathi doesn't ode. So it made sense to have it under the banner of Chidiya Ode. My practice as a children's book illustrator and as an art practitioner and someone who's so keenly interested in gender and identity and home and identity and all of that. That's how it started 16 years back or so. And then it sort of took a back burner because there were so many other things that were going on. I was teaching full time and I couldn't make time for it. So I did fewer projects in the middle, illustration projects. And now since the pandemic started, is when, like I said, I started to focus on what is it that I'm really good at? What is a big ask? It is people who really want to learn to draw. It's people who are so terrified of putting pencil to paper, who are so afraid that they will make something that's a bad drawing. Mm-hmm. And so I was immediately drawn to stories like this. A very dear friend of mine did not make it to the NID test and had a lovely portfolio of beautiful sketches. And this story comes to mind. And when they were rejected, they never touched their sketchbook again. They would stop drawing. So there are so many stories like this where, you know, and it's amazing, Swar, you persevered in spite of having got that F grade and having a red pencil slash your artwork. You were clever enough to cope and say, hey, I'll make a green tree for you. I have my own copy where I can experiment. I mean, that's incredibly astute of you to do that back then. But not many people have devices like this to cope with, right? People just give up. So, which is why I decided to bring what I was good at, which is working with people across ages and creating something together. I'm really good at that, in helping each person find their own creative voice and be comfortable and feel safe, not feel judged, not feel that their drawing will get slashed, but will be seen. And every single person's idea or concept or style will be seen, and we will figure out a way to grow from there. So that's now what Chidya, I do under Chidya Wood. I have several courses running, and Vaish was one of the people who signed on to an illustration course called the Chervil Club. I have two others, one in gouache, one in watercolors, and I'm happy to tell you that I've taught more than 200 people how to draw or illustrate, and online. I have students from all over the world. I have people signing in from Germany, from America, from the UK. And the pandemic has been terrible. Losses have been unmeasurable. It's been the worst. But if there's one good thing to come of it, it's sort of the shrinking of our geographies. And it's allowed people to come together, irrespective of where they are in the world. That's the one good thing that perhaps has come out of this. And I'm very particular. My courses are all online. And I'm really, really particular that the experience doesn't remain just, oh yes, this is this class that's going on. It's not. I am in touch all through over other platforms. There's a lot of individual feedback. And people can really grow in their practice, which is what I do now. Apart from, of course, painting and drawing myself. Yeah.
Sure.
One of the recent really fun projects that I worked on was for Juggernaut Books, which was this adorable 10 board books for babies on, which was looking at the very Western nursery rhymes that you and I have grown up with, right? Twinkle, twinkle, little star, row a boat, all of these, but to situate them in urban India and then see how would you imagine them. This was one of the most fun projects with Juggernaut that I did. And it was very challenging because, well, what is urban India? Urban India looks pretty much the same like any part of the world. If you look at my house, this is urban India. So how do you then convey an idea of Indianness? Super fun. So for instance, Twinkle Little Star takes place on the evening of Eid. And there's a little girl who's running up to see the moon, and she finds the star, and they go on an adventure. Row Your Boat happens over the Dal Lake in Kashmir. A father and daughter have gone to sell vegetables. And so lots of sweet little stories, but situated very much in urban India. And I was very particular and had a great publisher. I was very particular that I did not want to typecast a Kashmiri girl or a South Indian boy. So I was lucky enough to have a friend in Kashmir then. And he sent me lots of pictures of these absolute adorable pink-cheeked Golgappa babies who are wearing jeans and a jacket. I mean, it's very cold. So that's how our children looked, like they were in urban India. So this was a super exciting project. All of this is now Chidya Wood. Chidya Wood is now all of this. There's a component of teaching. There's a component of art making. Yeah. And then there is the art practice.
Nice. This book, I just like when you, while you were talking, I just quickly went to your website and I saw the thing. It looks very interesting. So did you guys, so I see all of them. Johnny Johnny, Yes Papa, I'm a Little Teapot, Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, of course, 1, 2, Buckle My Shoe, Wheels on the Bus. I do see you've gone for Mumbai with Wheels on the Bus. So tell me this, the text inside, are you sticking to the original text of this thing? And, you know, with the visuals, you're doing the Indian storytelling, or how did that go?
The text is absolutely the same. So the Wheels on the Bus, it's exactly the same. And if you look at it, the text is generic. The text by itself does not necessarily situate it in any particular context, right? Which is why it lends itself so beautifully. There's Rockabye Baby. Yeah, Rockabye Baby. which is
Right, it's
based
occurred
on the Indian
by correct.
Rambur.
Ah, yeah, I
Yeah,
can see that. Yeah.
and the five little ducks is based on a species of duck that's endemic to India. So instead of having sort of a very generic, you know how generic illustrations can get for children's books, right? The
True.
pig looks like a pig anywhere, cutesy,
True.
pink, round.
Pink.
But the idea, I actually did research on what's really endemic to us, and that's the species that he wrote in the story. And of course, Wheels of the Bus had to be Bombay. I grew up in Bombay, and the best bus, that's the image that jumps out at you, that happy red bus. Yeah, all those quirky characters, the lady who's come to sell fish and stinks up the entire bus, these are all lived experiences, which is the best part about being an illustrator, where you can bring lived experiences into the work that you do.
And that's, you're right, like, you know, that's something which I am also trying to do with the books I have done and I'm doing. You know, that's constantly a thing that I'm trying to do. And I think that's the flavor that you bring in as an illustrator, right? Like that's what you, apart from, you know, the style, of course, you know, we all run after the style, but I think that also is a part of your style, the things that you draw, right? Like, you know, in one of the books I did, like, in one of the spreads, you know, I had to draw like a public sort of a scene where, you know, a lot of people are there. And, you know, I actually did end up going through my photos because I, you know, I have this one huge problem whenever I draw characters. Character drawing is okay for me, but when I have to dress them up, I get super confused as to what do I put them in? Should it be a solid color sort of a thing? Should there be patterns? I don't know why it's like such a huge hurdle for me. Okay. So what I started doing was for this book last year when I was working on that, I actually went to my own photos, okay, my phone's photo gallery, and I actually went through the whole thing, and I actually found images where, you know, I was, let's say, took a photo of my mom, okay, and let's say, and that was outside in a park or something somewhere, and I saw in the background who all were there, like random people who were there, and I actually used them as reference for, you know, the clothes, because otherwise I would not have been able to. So that's definitely there. So when it comes to Chidiya Ur, what all courses do you have? Because, you know, now honestly I am interested a little bit, so that's where I'm coming from. What courses do you have? I know Vesh told me about the course that she was going through, and I know why, I also know why she signed up for that, because I remember her evening in the episode she mentioned that, you know, she wants to go back and get better at drawing, right? That's a skill that she wanted to get better at, right? So what courses do you have?
Right now under Chidiya Ur, I have three courses. One is called the Chogi Club, which is a 3 month long course, which is, and all of these courses are pitched at the absolute beginner or someone who's at intermediate level. The Chogi Club is looking at learning to draw and illustrate. So talking about, and not just learning to draw and illustrate, also how do you create a character, how do you tell a story? What are the principles of design? How do you, what is composition? Why is it that an image works? It's critically understanding image making. So it's beyond just the skill of drawing something, but really understanding why is it that it's speaking to you, and also having a look at the world of children, because I am a children's book illustrator, and that's where my learning comes from. And really trying to not speak down to a child, but speak with a child. So we look at a lot of interesting children's books. We tackle subjects that are not necessarily cutesy and childlike. It could be grief, separation, it could be anxiety, it could be all of that. So that's the Choli Club, which is learning to tell a simple story by learning to draw and illustrate while keeping in mind what is aesthetic, what's, how does something work. Why does something not work? Looking at color theory. So I'm bringing in all, so I'm taking all of this out of an elite design school and I'm putting it in my course as well because it's essential learning. The other two courses, there's one in Goash, which is called the Dawn Chorus. And I'm an amateur birder. I love birds. And always, everywhere I go, I have my binoculars and my bird book. And nothing gives me more joy than being able to see a bird and being able to identify it and draw it. So the Dawn Chorus is looking at gouache, but to draw birds and learning how to draw birds. So whether it's from observation or imagination, So that's the Don Chorus. The third course that I have is botanical illustration, looking at watercolor. Now, a lot of people are very intimidated with watercolor because water is doesn't
I'm
listen
one
to
of them.
anybody.
Yeah, I'm one of
Oh,
them.
you can't be.
Oh,
You're,
no,
I'm sorry, I'm
I'm
going to resort to a total cliche. You're Bengali. You have to be good at watercolor. Don't kill me for this.
No, but I started off with watercolor, of course, when I was a kid. And you're right, like Bengal, we do have something with watercolor. But yeah, I've had this conversation earlier with another really good watercolor painter, actually two of them in the first season, right? Sush was one of them, and Sush and Rachna spoke to them last season as well, and kind of Rachna and I, of course, became pretty good friends. They are amazing at watercolor, and I have had this
Amazing,
conversation with
beautiful
them.
work.
Yeah,
Yeah,
just
I
brilliant,
followed
right?
their work.
Yeah,
Absolutely
brilliant.
brilliant.
And that's a conversation I had that, I as a person like control. Watercolor is a place where I cannot have control because you're right, the water has its own mind. It'll just do whatever it wants to do. And I just feel very uncomfortable with watercolor because I'm like, oh God, what will happen? My perfect illustration, my perfect outline will get like, all over the place, and I'll lose it out or something. So yeah, watercolor is not really where I go. But yeah, you're talking about the watercolor course.
Yeah, it's called the Secret Garden. And interestingly, a lot of folks who sign up with these sort of great fear and need for perfection, but really let loose. And it brings a significant, I think when you let loose with watercolors, it must echo into other parts of your life as well, I'm assuming. Or maybe when you do watercolors, that's one place where you're like, I relinquish control and do with me what you will, water, flow. So I am assuming that becomes one space where you can breathe, just breathe.
Right. It's a lot like martial arts almost. Now you have to. I agree that watercolor, you have to let it go. That's true. Okay, so Kavita, since you spoke about, let's say, I don't know, the whole idea of actually, I was kind of more a little more interested towards the first course that you told me about, right? Like the whole illustration course, and where you are probably trying to teach people kind of, it's okay to draw a certain way. Like there's no one way or a standard way to draw, let's say, an elephant for that matter. You can draw an elephant in so many ways. Now, what do you think of style? I haven't asked this question to anyone for a long time now, and I think it's time to revisit for me, because I think personally I'm also going through a phase right now, I guess. What do you think of style, and what would be your, I don't know, suggestions to or recommendations for others to, find their style within quotes, like the whole thing of finding their style. So yeah, let's talk about style for a little bit.
I think a style evolves over time, and it's your distinct voice as a creative person or a maker. And I would strongly recommend that one doesn't get bogged down by it right at the start, but be open to being very experimental and looking at all the works that inspire you and that just make you light up from inside, right? That's what I tell all my learners. You will realize when you start collating together, let's say a little library, a visual library of works that you respond to with joy, you will eventually, once you've got 20, 30, 40, or 50 of those, you will begin to see that there is a through line. There is something in common. For me, it is spontaneity. It's work that looks like spontaneous combustion. It looks like people who've just put something together, and it's so evocative. For someone else, it might be very methodical, very precise, extremely detailed work. For someone else, it might be something else. So it's important, even before you say, this is my style, I think it's important to look and gather and reflect and try and understand what is it that you are responding to? What is it that you are aspiring to draw or paint like? So that's something that is very, very useful when you're starting out. And the other, I'd say, unashamedly, unabashedly, get out there and copy work. As long as you give credit, as long as you let the artist know that I'm learning and this is beautiful and I just want to know how you did this, because my heart responds to it. No artist is ever going to say, oh my God, how dare you? Give the artist full credit, but learn from their work. Try it out yourself. And try as many different kinds of things with, across mediums. And eventually, as you show up and you draw every day or paint every day, there will be a point where you won't have to look at something, where you'll just show up and the blank paper will not be that intimidating. And you will just put something together and it will start looking like you, as in I don't mean physical you, it start looking like your voice, your style. It will begin to emerge. So even if you draw 10 different things, you realize that, oh, they all look like what Swar makes. Or that all looks like Kavita style. That will evolve over time. So right now, I am still like this. A lot of people say they know when they see my work. I don't see it. I have a big library of artists that I gush over whose work really inspires me. And I try and I go into stalker mode. This is something also that I strongly recommend. And I get into their pages, I get into their sites, I look at tutorials, I read up about what materials they use, I see what reviews they have, what is it that they have that's out there in the public realm that you can learn from. So I really get in. I'm extremely curious. I don't look at something and say, oh, that's pretty, and move on. I'm like, why? How did you do this? Why is this beautiful? I want to figure it out. I guess that's the Jugadu Indian designer. I'm like, how did you do this? Tell me. And that's eventually a style evolves, I think, over time. And it's okay for that style to change. It's okay
that's
for
also
you.
Important.
It's absolutely okay for you to do something that's very different and try something. And a lot of times, Swar, what changes your style or what gives your style a shot in the arm is a change in the medium. For instance, I also stitch. So a lot of the drawings that I make with birds, when I try to stitch it, it's a completely different medium. It's a completely different material.
True.
But I have to relook at the fabric and the three-dimensionality of it. So when I do that, when I come back to my artwork looks different.
Right.
So this is it's super nice. You don't have to be stuck with one medium. You don't have to be stuck with one material. Materiality also changes the way you
create. True. And I also agree with, you know, the first point that you mentioned, and I saw it for my own self that, you know, I think as, and I don't know about, you know, artists, because I don't know, like, I don't want to get into the, you know, the whole nomenclature of things and, you know, the definition of things, but I'd say, you know, I do consider myself more of an illustrator than, let's say, a fine artist, let's say, if I go by that definition, right? And at least for an illustrator, I would say, you know, that really is true that, you know, over the last 2-3 years, I did start collecting because, you know, children's book, I was like, okay, this is the place, right? And I started like going to, you know, bookstores like every month, buying books by the kilo, let's say. And, you know, and going through a whole bunch of books and actually filling my cupboard and everything. And you're right. Like, I realize now that there is a pattern that emerges when you look at all my books, the ones that I have collected, because there are certain things which I really like and which really talks to me. So, yeah. And, you know, I probably also am going to kind of, you know, consciously, subconsciously take my style towards that. So that's there for sure. I agree on that. Right. Perfect. Cool. So, you know, with this, let's probably move towards the last part of the conversation. And, you know, I was just thinking about something this morning. Maybe from this episode, I'll start doing that. So I kind of got my hands on a whole bunch of really interesting questions. Okay. Now, these questions are not coming from me, but I actually found because, you know, I was working on something for office, and that's where I kind of struck upon that. And I was like, you know, this is a very cool addition, or can be a very cool addition to the episodes, right? So what I'm going to try and do is maybe not every episode, but let's see how it goes. I'll try and randomly select 3-4 questions, and again, need not be, you know, connected to each other, but I'm pretty sure each of these questions has the potential to really open up a lot of things and actually have, like, you know, really good conversations. So I would like to, you know, start off my experimentation with you, since I really understand you love experimentation. So let's
oh yes, guinea pig,
perfect. Go for it. Let's begin. The first one, okay, the first one. Wait. For before I go into that, I actually had written another question for you while you were talking. So I'll complete that and then I'll go for the whole experimentative sort of a thing. You mentioned about the shows, right? You were with Sony Television for a while. Any shows that you worked on that we may know of, just like, you know, as a GK, general knowledge about Kavita Arvind?
Okay, so you have to be significantly older to do this. But I don't know if you remember some show called Kusum.
Kusum, yeah, of course. Yeah, Hamari Kusum.
Oh, my God. Yeah, so
yeah,
that.
Of course.
And also Boogie Woogie.
Boogie Woogie, of course. Robert Jaffrey, right?
And Ahat.
I never watched Ahat. I never do horror since childhood. I never watched Ahat, no.
Some of those shows, again, it's not really, some promos, not the show. The show is done by the production house. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just do the on-air promos. So some of those, and maybe one or two nice, Hoobahoo. I mean, I know all these are like absolute blasts from the past. Hoobahoo, which is actually a nice show. And then Dhadkan. I'm remembering a few things. Yeah. Haal Kaisa Hai Janab Ka. These are bringing back such terrible memories of working for entertainment television. You've got to stop this conversation now. Ew.
Okay. So now to something more, you know, let's talk about, you know, something which is more, creative and reflective and all of those tiv wale words. Okay. Let's go for that. Digestive. Okay. So the first question is this. If you were forced to take time off from work to learn a new skill, what would it be and why? I think you've done it multiple times already.
Yes, I have.
But now, at present.
Wow. A skill. Oh, my God. You know, I'm terrible at giving quick answers at things, but I'm going to try and give this a shot. It would be a sport. It would. I'm already trying to learn tennis and I suck at it. Mm-hmm. It could be swimming. I know how to swim, but I also am not very good at it. So it would be something physical like that. It's either going to be a sport or maybe it would be finances, managing finances or some sort of.
They teach me after that. Okay, after you're done, teach me.
Taxes, finances, running a business, something like that. So, either of these two.
If swimming or tennis, the physical aspect that you mentioned, why that physical, dora dori wala scene?
Okay, because I have never played a competitive sport in my life and I suck at it. I do not have good hand-eye coordination. I cannot dance. I often forget which is left and which is right. I'm hopeless. And tennis is the hardest sport that I've been learning. It's been 3 months now and I'm still terrible at it. And I'm not someone who quits very fast. I am quite persistent and I want to get better at it. So I'm failing hopelessly. But I haven't quit yet. I've come this close to it. So because I am so ungainly and not sporty is why I'd like to do something like tennis, because it really, you're in the present. And
right.
I like being fit. So fitness has always been something that I've been into. And
Perfect. Sure. Likewise, so tennis, in fact, like, you know, last year, it's like, I hear about tennis and, you know, this whole guilt comes into my mind, Kavita. Okay. So last year, I think Jan, if I'm not wrong, Jan. Yeah, probably Jan. I decided to go for a tennis class myself because I have been to sports, right? So in school, college, like I used to go for a proper table tennis coaching to Sports Authority of India. Like, you know, I got trained beside some Olympics people and everything, right? So that's something I've done. So tennis was on my list for a while and I decided to go last year. And I did it for a good 3 months, okay? And I was so happy, like, doing it, right? Of course, because I play table tennis, a little bit of it came to me because, you know, the forehand, backhand, you know, those things kind of are similar. Of course, you know, the posture is different, of course. I was almost getting okay with, you know, serving the ball as well without adding any sort of pace
Oh,
or
wow.
spin to
I
it.
am
So it
so
would,
jealous of you
yeah, it
right
would
now.
reach the other side. It would reach the other side and also before the line. So, you know, it would qualify for a serve. But then, you know what happened? Something or the other office related came in, and I was going every morning before I would wake up super early. And fairly close to my house as well. I take the car, go there, practice for like, you know, play for a good 1, 1.5 hours, come back and start my office. And because it's work from home, it's a lot easier, right? And then, you know, office got a little more demanding, and I actually, yeah, I changed jobs as well. And the new job was, is a little more demanding compared to the previous one. And yeah, I, you know, one day I didn't go. After that, the next day I didn't go. And you know how it happens, right? And then I
Yes.
just absolutely stopped going. And now, you know, my shoes are there. You know, those for tennis, you need like those non-marking shoes, which I bought, right? So that my tennis racket is there. And, you know, my shorts, you know, I have not worn those shorts ever again because out of the guilt, I can't wear those shorts.
Oh my God, it's brutal.
It's brutal, yeah. And I'm also thinking, should I go back? But I'm thinking, kya muh leke jaunga? Like, what will I tell these people? Like, they were really invested in me. They were like, yes, we will get you back into the whole fitness thing again. But yeah, okay. Next question. Let's not guilt myself anymore. The next question. What advice would you give your younger self?
To not be so preoccupied with pleasing everyone and just be able to listen to your own heart with a little bit more clarity and say no a lot more often than you do. And everything's going to be okay. You're going, there's something
Why the say
good
no
will
part?
come of this.
Why the say no part? Something interesting behind that?
Oh, because if you're a classic people pleaser, you can't say no, right? So I used to be a people pleaser and I would never say no.
Right.
Everything was like, yeah, okay. And I'd be like, okay, let's do what you want to do. And I wasn't really in touch with what I wanted. And the best thing about being older, Swar, especially if you're on this side of the 40s, is you give a lot less quotes to everybody else and you
True.
start listening to your own voice a lot more. If you, of course, there are wiser people who do this earlier, so it's not like you have to be over the 40s. Yeah, so I tell my younger self that yeah, it's all right.
Okay.
And yeah, and also
All right.
forgive my younger self easily today. It's yeah, I'm gonna yeah.
So forgive yourself as well, like, you know, allow yourself. That makes sense. Makes sense. Give yourself permission. Sure. The third one. What stresses you out, and how do you decompress?
Oh my God, the smallest things can stress me out. It really stresses me out when there's chaos and disorder. I am a perfectionist and I like things to be kept in a particular way. I get very stressed out if things are not at right angles. I can get stressed out. Messes stress me out. Being around very, very anxious people stresses me out. Though I've heard tell that I'm very calming, that people find my presence very calming, but inside
You
I'm like, oh
are,
my God,
yeah.
I'm so stressed out.
Oh God, no, but
That stresses me
I
out.
actually agree with those people. I so far, you know, it's been what, 1, 1.5 hours of us talking. You have been extremely calming. And you know, for the audience as well, when we started off, you know, just before the recording, I hit the record button. You know, last moment there were some technical glitches. And when we actually got into the call, Kavita and I was actually, you know, not calm and not in my senses. So I was like, you know, reeling through, right? And Kavita, you know, immediately she was like, oh my God, you need some time. And she was actually very nice. So I have to like pull it out on the record. Very, very nice. Yeah. So coming back to you, Kavita, go for it.
Yeah, thank you. So I've heard said, and you have confirmed it, that I
Yeah.
happen to be a calming person. I get stressed easier. And the way I cope with stress is in the worst possible way known to humankind, is by putting in work, organizing stuff, pushing furniture around, arranging everything, making sure that I need little lists, everything is color-coded. Yes, so very much like a Monica
I was thinking, yeah, exactly. I
from the
was thinking of
Friends.
Monica. I was thinking of
Yeah,
Amy Santiago
yes.
from your 99 Brooklyn 99.
I
So yeah.
love Amy Santiago. Oh my God, I so get her. I am your Amy Santiago. Yes.
Makes sense, yeah, and exactly. You described her, both of them, in fact, perfect. So yeah, done. What stresses you out, and how do you decompress? Done. And the last question in this round would be, what is the best career advice someone has given you? Very similar to the second question I asked you, but yeah, best career advice somebody has given you so far.
The best career advice. Oh my God, I have to really think about this one.
Sure, go
I'm
for it.
not sure. Give me a minute. This is going to be a lot of as. The best career advice, or in general, the best advice that I've been given is, if it doesn't work for you, don't do it. If it's not a hell yes, it's a polite no. So it's more life advice, but it sort of works for your career as well. So if I'm not really excited about something, if I'm not like, oh my God, I love this, I'm not doing it.
And any specific event where you ended up not listening to yourself and actually doing it? Anything that comes to your mind?
Oh yes, there have been. And then I've kicked myself constantly through the project saying, why am I doing this? Because you know what? We're not taught to listen to our intuition. And sometimes our intuition tells you that this is not the client for you. This client's going to be a pain. But you're like, let's do it, because this is something so challenging, and let's do it. And then you're kicking yourself for the entire project saying, oh my God, what's this madness? Yeah, that's happened. I'm sure it's happened a lot to you
Of
as well.
course, of course, of course.
Yeah.
Crying through a project, almost calling up the person and saying, hey, listen, please take away the money. I don't want to. But yeah, you know, that whole thing of self-pride and all of these things coming in, like, no, you have to complete it. And then you kick, you cry, you starve, but you still complete it and you're like done with that. So yeah, I think at the end of the day, you learn something from that for sure. Cool. So, you know, those were the four questions I really wanted to ask you. And thank you so much for answering them and being the guinea pig as well. One more thing that I was thinking of asking you while you were answering before this segment was that I remember you mentioned that, you know, you go and stalk your favorite artists and whatnot, right? Any names that come to your mind, like, you know, my listeners or I should go and check a few of your inspirations?
I will have to look them up.
Go for it. Go for
because,
it.
Yeah, and you can be, future you can edit me looking this up.
Yeah, sure thing. Note to
great,
future self.
I will tell you. Note to future self. So I follow a whole lot of artists who are not just illustrators and painters, but also artists who are ceramic artists, people who work with fabric, who stitch. So a whole lot of them. But some of my favorites would be Claire Young, who does a lot of collage work. I really like the spontaneity of, she calls herself Cosmory. But her name is Anna. Her sketchbooks are such beautiful explorations of the countryside. It is the style that I really respond to, which is very, very spontaneous, which just looks like she just turned up and crawled her art material over the paper.
What's her name again? I didn't catch that. What's her name again?
Her handle is called Cosmoriste.
Okay.
That's Cosmoriste. I'm not sure how you pronounce something like that. Let's see who else. Yes, and of course I love the work of Stephanie Coleman. I think her name is Stephanie Coleman. Stephanie Coleman does a lot of work with birds and nature, so I love her work. Yeah, that would be about it, I think. There's lots more. Like I said, I really spend a lot of time looking at art.
Right.
There's a whole bunch. Yeah.
And what would be your favorite picture book? Since you and I are in that same sort of a phase or plane, what would be your favorite picture book?
The favorite picture book that I've read recently is Jessica Love's book. This is about this little boy. Wait, sometimes I am so bad at coming up with names.
Yeah, names. That's my kryptonite. Even I.
Oh, you are very good. Don't worry. This is about a little boy. Julian is a mermaid.
Julian is a mermaid.
Thank you
Googling.
So much.
Yeah, no, I googled it up. So yeah, Julian is a mermaid. Yeah.
Julian as a Mermaid is my favorite book, and it's illustrated by Jessica Love. And I really like how gentle the book is, and it's talking about difficult concepts of gender and identity. That is my favorite book.
Oh yeah. Okay, now I get the premise based on the name and like you said, gender, and that seems like a very the premise seems very interesting and good, I would say. Like, impactful is a word I'd use for sure.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Perfect. Cool. So with this we will bring this towards a closure. Thank you so much for the time, Kavita, that you spent. I still do have one last question, the final, the grand finale of my questions, which I'll ask. But I think you have kind of answered them, in bits and pieces throughout anyway. But but before I go into that, thank you so much. I do want to stay in touch with you for because I know you work I don't want to call it a consultant, but as a mentor. I know you work as a mentor as well. And, I think I have been on the lookout for somebody who's a mentor for a while. And maybe, I may look at it in a very, approach you in a very official way as well. But, that's something which I have been meaning to probably in the future sometime. That's something which is in my mind. But, nevertheless, my last question to you is, why do you do this? So, when it comes to making art, let's say, and you've been doing it for such a long time, right since the days of Goriahat and, Akar class, that art class, the Saturday evening art class, right? Why do you do this? Why do you keep doing this?
The only time that I feel calm and centered, and the only time that I feel that everything's okay with the world is when I paint, or when I draw, or when I stitch, when I make, when I engage with my hands. So much so that I'm able to process difficult feelings, complex ideas, critically think when I'm actually making with my hands. So I'm thinking with my hands as well. And it's helped me, it's kept me sane and kept me gathered and centered through some of the roughest times of my life and through some of the most joyful times of my life. It's been a constant. It helps me breathe. I can go on and on. It's who I am, and I want to bring this to a larger audience of people. And I want to make a space or a creative space to be a space where you can breathe and get to know a little bit more about who you are, because that's what art has shown me. It's helped me connect deeper with who I am as an individual, who I am as a mother to a young teenage girl, all of that. So it's a complex answer, unfortunately, and it's sort of like a big
It
ball of
always is. It
yarn
always
of
is.
wool.
Yeah, it always
Yeah, it's
is.
not a simple reason.
Exactly. That's why I
It's
said
not a
my
simple
grand
reason.
finale of questions. Makes sense. And I think that's the time where your probably Amy Santiago goes to sleep probably. That's the only time where she gets to sleep. And the other side comes out. I wouldn't say a Jake Peralta, because of course Jake Peralta is not
Oh, I
the
haven't gotten there
Yeah, exactly. That's not
to
calm. That's
Jake.
not Jake Peralta is not calm at all. Who would be
Yeah.
calm? Captain Holt would be calm, right? I think, yeah. Out of the whole cast, I think Captain Holt would be the calmest. And
The
maybe,
calmest. There is.
yeah, I think so. Captain Holt
Yeah.
would be the calmest. Perfect. Cool. So,
Captain Holt.
yeah. So thank you so much, Kavita, for this time and for listening. I know you bake as well, right? I remember you mentioning you bake as well.
Oh, yes, I do. I bake as well, and I have a massive sweet tooth, and I'm trying not to eat too much sugar and succeeding maybe sometimes.
Oh, good. At least sometimes. That's great. Did you go
Sometimes.
on the topic of sweets? Did you go back to Calcutta after leaving? Have you been?
Oh, swear. The Bengali sweets are like kryptonite for me. Let's not even go there. If you give me a kilo of rascolas or anything, I'm going to sit down and finish it in front of you.
You
You
should
will
come
not
to my
even
place.
blink.
I'm honest, and given that Vaishnavi also stays very close, so you should come to my place because bang opposite my house. Last month they opened this new sweet shop, which is for Bangalore. Sweet shops in Bangalore is not that common. Like bakeries are common, juice shops are common, right? And they opened a sweet shop by a Bengali, and the name of the sweet shop is Rasogolla, right? And I
Oh
swear to
my
you,
God.
they actually make good sweets, right? They actually, because again, it's certified by a entire Bengali. They actually make good sweets. And, you know, I have been, the moment it opened, I went and I kind of started going like, you know, twice or thrice a week. And then after 3 weeks, I was like, dude, what are you doing? And then it's been three it's, weeks now that I have not crossed the road. Like every time I take
yeah, I'll
a
tell you what.
I see that.
Get back to tennis and keep visiting Rasagolla.
Ah, right.
Yes.
Oh God. No, but have you gone back to Calcutta after leaving back in childhood?
Just once, but it was a fleeting work trip, so barely got the time. So I haven't really gone back or spent any significant amount of time back in Calcutta.
So your daughter has still not seen South Point?
No, not at all. No, I was saying South Point, I remember the only memory, to be fair, of South Point I have, is there were like 100 sections.
Mm-hmm.
And all of us have to stand with one little placard saying section H. And there'll be A, B, C, D, whatever. Or H1, H2 or something. And they were such a massive school.
That is still there. Like, you know, because I know my cousin, when they go to pick him up, like, you know, especially when the school is over and the kids have to come out. That's like it's chaos because, you know, all those parents and, you know, Bengali parents being the helicopter parents that they are, everybody trying to, you know, rush in through that tiny little gate and all those, like, you know, I don't know, like an army of kids inside and everybody trying to, you know, go in or come out sort of a thing. That's crazy. But yeah, South Point is, I think, known for, you know, having a whole bunch of sections and also different classes, like, you know, morning school. And I think in your time also it was there, right? Like morning school and afternoon school. So there would be different.
I vaguely remember there was an afternoon school as well.
Exactly. So that's still the case. But anywho, just out of curiosity, do you remember Tasty Corner by any chance? Because pretty much all South Pointers do remember Tasty Corner, which happens to be a kachori shop right next to your school around the corner. And, you know, it's still there and they do sell great kachoris for that matter. But yeah, any memory?
No, of course not. Because I was like a six-year-old and how is a six-year-old going to eat kachori from a shop? Amma cooked for me. Yeah.
I will send you a photo because I have a photo of Tasty Corner because this time when I went, I took it for a friend. I'll send it to you right after this and let's see if, you know, it kind of rekindles some memory. But yeah, on that note of kachori, let's close this conversation. It's also dinner time for both of us. But Kavita, again, thank you so much for your time. This has actually been a very enlightening conversation for me. I'll use that word very carefully, enlightening. But yeah, it has been a really good conversation. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you so much, Swar. You have a lovely evening and thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you again.
All right. So as I said, that was an enlightening conversation with Kavita. Do remember to check out her work. Of course, I will add a whole bunch of links, you know, her website, Chidia Or, and also her Instagram in the show notes so that you can check that. And if you get the chance, drop by my page as well. And I'll see you in a bit with another guest in the Paper Pencil podcast next week. Till then,